For the longest time now, I had been looking for the perfect way to serve my agave spirits. Be it a vessel, a copita, a glass, the shape didn't really matter. What mattered was that this vessel was equally as stunning as the agave spirits I was serving. So I just didn't want something that was beautiful. I also wanted something that talked about Mexico in its full glory. And finally, finally, after many years, our friends at mezcalforlife.com saved me. They found what I wanted. This came in the shape of marble glasses. I've always loved marble because it's the one thing that is gonna last you your lifetime. Even if you have dogs or kids, it is virtually impossible to break them, though you can achieve it. But most importantly, I think there are very few materials that can show with such precision the place and the artisans that were involved into making this. Every time I see one of these glasses, I have to imagine the mountain that was cracked open in order to extract this marble, and then the process in which the artisan thought, yes, this is what I want. This is what I think is beautiful, and this is what I want to share with the people that are coming to my town. So if there's any chance that you are as excited about marble as I am, I recommend you to go visit mezcalforlife.com. That is, again, mezcalforlife.com, and I really hope you get to find your perfect copita.
I am Lou Bank.
I am Chava Periwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Green Gags bartenders better understand agave spirits and rural Mexico, including Oaxaca, the place that you are loving to death, Chava.
I am not. I rarely go there. I mean, I lived there for 8 years. And I definitely heard it.
You lived there for 8 years?
Yeah, I did so.
Well, that's taking a little bit much out of Oaxaca, isn't it? That's quite a bit of impact, 8 years.
I will say I got scarred by Oaxaca, but yeah, sure. I also took quite a bit of it.
Well, anyway, what I want to talk about, Chava, is this woman who I admire quite a bit, Fabiola Santiago. She wrote a piece in Medium that's been circulating, medium.com. It's been circulating around the social media on the webs, the interwebs. That talks about how to approach tourism in Oaxaca if you're not from Oaxaca.
And, okay, so actually, let's just start from the beginning.
Sure.
Because, you know, when you travel around Oaxaca, even people from Oaxaca can be tourists.
That's true.
You know, when you're in Miahuatlán and somebody from the big city from Oaxaca gets there, it's a 300,000 people city. It's as populated as Amsterdam, so it's a city in my book. So even Oaxacans can be tourists in their own state, right?
Fair. That is very fair.
Okay, I just wanted to throw that out there. And okay, continue, please.
Okay, so she wrote this piece that was very specifically, or at least it reads that way to me. You should read it yourself, and you know, we're gonna have a link on our on the webpage.
I've read it, but you're talking to the road trippers, sure.
Yeah. I'll let you know when I'm talking to you, Chava.
Okay, please. go. We're gonna finish this.
So if you've not read it, you can go to our webpage for this episode at agaveroadtrip.com. We'll have a link to the piece on medium.com. But it feels to me like she wrote it specifically for people from the USA who traveled down to Oaxaca. And, you know, and Fabiola is somebody who was born and not for her entire childhood raised in Oaxaca, but she was between there and California. But a place, you know, Oaxaca is a place she calls home. And it feels to me like, and again, this is, you know, I don't want to put words in her mouth. It feels to me like she is concerned that this place that she loves is going to be loved to death by people like me traveling down there to be tourists and to see the beauty of it.
Well, I think there's love and then there's love, right? There are maniacs like you that will go there for 500 times. And I think that it's a very minuscule proportion. And though it's, you know, sometimes you may feel weird about my own story of how I stayed there 8 years, because I know so many people, so many kids that have the same story as I do. I went there to volunteer for 3 months, that became 6 months, that became 8 months, that became 8 years. So I just, it's such a funny cliche, all these kids that get there and just never leave. Which it's, you know, the joke in Oaxaca is that you ate a grasshopper and then you're meant to stay. The grasshopper has put some witchcraft on top of you and you will never leave Oaxaca. So there's that kind of love. There's a lot of the people that go there every year or multiple times a year or stay to live there, even if they're not originally from Oaxaca. And then there is the love of people that saw this name on an airplane magazine, on social media, somewhere, mm-hmm. and they're suddenly extremely curious about knowing what's happening in the south of Mexico, and they go for a weekend for 4 days, but it's more, you know, like just to put another stamp on their books of travels, right? Yeah. Would you agree that
anytime you say that there's not one reason that people go to Oaxaca or one way they go, you're always going to be correct.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my question will be, is this, and my reading is that a lot of this piece is more directed towards a person that is going to spend their minuscule amount of time and it's not going to engage in a long-term way with the place. Will you say that I'm correct?
I don't know. I guess I probably should have read through the whole piece again before we recorded this
well,
episode.
Well, no, actually she has a whole point about buying land in Oaxaca.
Oh, she does. She that's true. That, yeah.
And she claims that gringos or people from somewhere else shouldn't do such a thing, which I don't know. I'm a big fan of diverse communities.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much I agree with that. And I can understand gentrification in some capacity, but just don't agree with that one.
I hear you. When I read the piece, I'd say that like 80% of it I agreed with, 20% I didn't. You know, as a guy who lives in Chicago's Humboldt Park neighborhood, when Connie and I first moved here, we came to look at the place that we now live in, that we've lived in since 2008.
It's called the Lubang Castle. It's full of lights. It has two guards on the top with coal archers.
It is the Connie Bank Castle. It's more like the Jacob Bank Castle. Anyway, when we first were coming to look at the place, there were signs up all over the neighborhood saying, no se vende.
Oh, I love it.
Right? Do not sell. It's not for sale. And some of what Fabiola wrote brought me back to seeing those signs and feeling like really torn, because on the one hand, I get it that you don't want gentrification forcing people out of a place. But on the other hand, you know, I have a real problem with any community that is considered only for one type of person.
Isolation usually gives you a bunch of problems, and some of them might be genetic. So I think it's better to let's learn something from Tequilana Beber. So
And I wasn't thinking of genetics, but I do think that the more we understand each other, the more we meet each other, the more we understand each other, and the more we understand each other, I think the better we off we all are.
So,
I think.
So I know. Wait. So I now know where I want to direct this conversation, and I think it's the best that we can do not to fall in the typical place that I think most of the things we're saying go, it's a realization just happened upon me.
Yeah.
So I think the really interesting question about tourism and outsiders coming to a place is, how did you create, we both agree, finally, in something, that a diverse community, it's a more rich community.
I would absolutely agree with that, yeah.
So you need outsiders to come in order to get a diverse community, right? Yes or yes? There's no way to get diversity otherwise.
Yeah.
So how can you do that without those outsiders diminishing or killing or sterilizing what was there and instead enriching it?
And but one man's enrichment is another man's sterilization, right?
Well, and I'm not talking about money. I think that is really important, right? Because I think we start getting into the money part, Jesus, it's such a boring conversation, because then any industry can be a big offender. From tourism to corn to mezcal, it's just like how much is a fair... I think I don't want to touch upon that in this specific conversation. But I agree with you. Like, one person's enrichment can be another sterilization. Maybe the fact that now you have beautiful pastries, French pastries in Oaxaca made by Boulenc, it makes people go nuts. They say that that is the ultimate sign of horrific gentrification.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize. I thought everybody loved Boulenc.
Oh, no. Oh. No, no. It's such a contentious thing.
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is. And, you know, and I think even in that contention, as long as it's a respectful contention and there aren't bricks being thrown through windows, I think that can be a productive conversation that leads to growth.
Yes. And I remember so much, it was during Day of the Death. I was in Oaxaca. I was not living there anymore. And there was this gay bar called El Número. And El Número, it's such a colorful, beautiful place full of mirrors. And, well, I'd rather not describe this because I think we're not rated for the description to make it on there. But there was a beautiful poster set on the door of El Número that said, Bájale tu tradicionalismo, like stop your traditionalisms and like be open for new stuff or something along those lines. And it was like this super like anime looking Japanese Disneyland kind of stuff mixed with Day of the Dead motives. It was beautiful. I was like, this is what I think when I think about why I love Oaxaca or what makes Oaxaca special to me. It is not all these ultra, you know, like safe traditions that have not moved. It is its crazy flexibility. It is its crazy ability to have all these different languages within themselves and this crazy geography and all these different traditions and make something out of it. That's what I love about Oaxaca.
Yeah, you know, I get that, but I also say, I don't think it's productive to view one thing as the right thing. So, and I say this to say, I think there's also this great beauty in these things that are ultra traditional that haven't been moved. And I don't think the two things have to fight one another. I think they can coexist.
I would love for you to tell me one ultra traditional thing that has not moved.
One ultra traditional thing that has not
moved. That has not moved in 50 years.
Okay. In 50 years. Well, hell yeah. Like, okay. So the clay pot stills.
Oh, they have definitely changed. Just the, and you know why? Just the fact that there's glaze.
Okay. You know, I guess if you had given this to me beforehand, like that feels
to me
like
I'd have to. I'm messing with your head.
I'd have to really search. But, you know, when I think about, you know, 50-year-old. Okay, so here's something I can pull up from my past. It's funny because I'm going to contradict myself in it. But, you know, I was raised Jewish and I gave it up for Lent. But I was raised Jewish and I don't practice anymore. But I think there's a real beauty to the Seder. Right? Where every Passover, you have this meal and you say the same things, you read the same things, you ask the four questions. And to me, there's something really beautiful about that tradition that has not changed one iota. And I think that's beautiful, which doesn't mean that the only things that are beautiful are the things that haven't changed. But I do think it's important to preserve while at the same time being open to some progression in another expression of that thing that you're preserving.
I think this actually comes down to a lot of what we try to do in Sacred. Sacred being the NGO that you invited me to work at with you.
And it invited you. I gave you money.
Well, yeah. that's how I call an invitation.
Oh, okay.
But I think that as long as the community is empowered, as long as it's in its terms. And again, like this gets so complicated because, you know, even as we were saying, Oaxaca, even a small town, it's populated by various communities within them itself. Mm-hmm. So when you say the community chose, it's a lot of times it's being used as, yes, these immaculate people with perfect perceptions and well, extremely pure hearts.
And a singular vision. And it's never a singular. I don't care what community you're talking about. You will never have, if you took a vote, you would never have unanimity with a single decision. Just doesn't happen.
Exactly. So when people say like the committee should be empowered, I always like it always gives me a terrible headache. What I do believe that is important is that the changes that are being enacted in a place don't destroy for good that place, or don't destroy the means that that place has for its survival.
Yeah, you know, I'd agree with that. And, you know, and I really do think that is the whole point to Fabiola's piece. Mm. You know, she starts off by saying, in essence, if she could, she'd like to just end tourism altogether, which, hey, you know, it turns out that actually did happen. It was called a pandemic. And right?
And people love it. Did people love it more or less?
The economic toll that took on parts of Oaxaca were extreme. But, you know, I get where she's coming from when she says that. And even more so, like I read the piece and people online not everybody, obviously, because again, there's no unanimity among anybody, any groups, but there were people who felt that she had a tone. And I, you know, my first response to that is, well, if you're reading a tone into it, you're reading a tone into it. This was a written piece. It wasn't spoken. So any tone that's there is
But you know why, Lou? I think a lot of people are very sensitive about this thing, because I think that there is a significant group of people that read this piece that do care honestly about Oaxaca.
Oh, I think so too.
And that a lot of, and that they are these kind of people that have decided to have long-term commitment to the place.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
And that they've, I wouldn't say they've done sacrifices, but they've gone beyond their comfort zone in order to share that with other people. And I think a lot of the impact that they think they have in this space has to do with them being brokers into this beautiful place and sharing it to people that they think have the means to properly appreciate it. And I think that a piece that suggests that by doing so, by bringing people from the outside into this place, you're hurting it. I believe that it's something that touches a very sensitive place within this group.
I get it. But literally, I'm the guy you're talking about here. the number of people I've brought with me, the number of people I've encouraged to come down. But I don't take umbrage with anything, almost anything that she says. I do blanch at the idea that there shouldn't be any tourism because, again, to get back to that first point that we made, I think places and people are enriched by cross-cultural connections. But, you know, I think if you take her piece at face value, what she's saying is, I really want to preserve this place. These are the things that I think are most putting this place at risk. And I don't disagree with her on any of them. You know, you and I have had this conversation before. I think it was at the Tales of the Cocktail thing last summer, where I am very conscious of the fact that when I travel down to Mexico, travel anywhere, but specifically in Mexico, I feel like I'm leaving this carbon wake behind me. And that as a result, I have to do more good. I have to be very cognizant of doing things that I think are going to have a positive impact. That I love reading pieces like this because, in essence, they show me somebody else's view of how to mitigate this carbon footprint that I'm leaving every time I step into Mexico.
And I think carbon is one way to say it, like the physical, if you want, number-based impact that you're having in the place. But I think that what I like the most about this piece, at least in it touching the tip of the iceberg, is maybe suggesting that a place like Oaxaca, that, and I keep making this point a little bit, right? Like, Oaxaca is tough. Oaxaca will survive it all. Once Oaxaca gets completely taken over by the tourists, the teachers will come by and burn every hotel to the ground. Hey, Oaxaca, you'll make it. But it's just as the Amazonas being one of the most dense, incredibly intimidating jungles in the planet, yeah, it's actually a rather fragile ecosystem. So as much as I would love to think that you know, Oaxaca is the Mike Tyson of the cities against tourism, it can still be knocked out. It is still a fragile thing.
Sure, so, and I know that that's not, like, when I say carbon, I actually mean everything. Because people are carbon based.
Yeah.
So yeah. So I mean, yeah. like having bringing a ton of money into a single community can cause irreparable damage to the structure of that community. Like I get all of that.
But again, then, and this can be so paralyzing. And that's, now I said what I liked. Now I will conclude with the area where I don't fully agree, that it's sort of paralyzing, you know, because I'm a big fan of making terrible mistakes.
You know, like okay. Well, then how is it paralyzing if you're a fan of terrible mistakes? Like, you shouldn't be paralyzed from doing anything.
Well, no, because then when I think about how fragile these places are, then I get all self-conscious about my terrible mistakes and the terrible, like, consequences that I can have. And I mean, there's this philosopher that I love, Slavoj Žižek, that he says the most significant thing we can do is do nothing. And I hate that. I hate that with such passion, because I want to do stuff. You know, I drink enough coffee in the morning. I want to do things. So and as we're saying, all of these communities are so over the top specific. You know, like I lived in 5 different communities in the time that I spent in Oaxaca. None of them behaved in the same way. None of them had the same value systems.
None of them
cared about the same things.
Yeah.
So it's impossible to go into one of these places doing anything else but just, you know, getting your arms up to the air and say, like, okay, guys, I'm here to make horrible mistakes where I learn in the long term.
I like that as a conclusion from your side. You know, for me, the biggest thing that I took away from this, honestly, was a few days after we received, after I first read this piece, and I was thinking, well, I like this about it, and I dislike that about it. We received through our website a request from a publicist, I know, to do an episode of our podcast, and she clearly hadn't listened to our podcast, but to do an episode of our podcast about this tour group that was coming down, led by a chef in the USA. And they were charging $4,000 per person for the trip. And normally
they were gonna, it was gonna be an immersive, can I do a voice? Roy, help me with this. An immersive experience, getting to know the ancestral techniques for making mezcal and the traditional cooks, stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay,
and end of the noises.
Yeah. So it was that. And normally we just would have sent back a no thank you. But then I was looking through the materials, and there were a couple pictures of our friend Mescalero, Maestro Mescalero Eduardo Anales, in there. And I thought, oh, well, if Lalo's in on this, and hey, yeah, sure, I'm happy to promote it. So I reached out to Lalo, and he'd never heard of it. And one of the $4,000, they're selling a $4,000 trip, and they're doing it with pictures of Lalo, and he's literally not only never given them permission, but he's never heard of it. And it struck me that, you know, one of the things that that Fabiola had said in her piece was, you know, don't take pictures without permission. These are people, they're not props. And here, not only was a guy who's, I mean, for me at least, is a big piece of the cultural heritage that I love about Oaxaca being used as a prop to sell a $4,000 per person trip. All of which I say, like, so you had your conclusion. My conclusion is this, like, if you're reading any tone into what Fabiola wrote, the tone might be in you. Be open to the fact that, that there's stuff in here that you might disagree with, but it's coming from a place of love. She's trying to save the place that she loves. And, you know, right or wrong, I got to admire her and appreciate her for putting herself out there and suggesting these things.
Yeah, and just people can be annoying, and I fully agree with her. Be it people from Mexico City, from the United States, or, you know, like every person that is not from a place can be tremendously annoying. So yeah, there you go.
Okay, well, this has been a long one. Let's wrap it up, and I'll catch up with you on the next one.
See you, Otto. This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.